This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Diane Roberts. An alliance of influential worker unions in Myanmar has called for an extended nationwide strike starting Monday with the intention of causing the full extended shutdown of the country's economy in an attempt to stop a military coup. In a statement, nine labor organizations called on all Myanmar people to stop work in an effort to reverse the seizure of power by the military, which overthrew the civilian government February 1st. This comes as thousands of Myanmar anti-coup demonstrators defied a continued military crackdown Sunday and follows overnight raids in Yangon in which an official from Aung San Suu Kyi's party reportedly was beaten to death and several others detained. Pope Francis heard Muslim and Christian residents in the ruined Iraqi city of Mosul tell of their lives under the brutal Islamic State rule Sunday, blessing their vow to rise up from ashes and promising them, quote, fraternity is more durable than fratricide, end quote. Francis, on a historic first visit by a pope to Iraq, visited the northern city to encourage the healing of sectarian wounds and to pray for the dead of any religion. Earlier, he celebrated Mass with several thousand worshipers spread across a stadium, the largest liturgy of his trip to pandemic-hit Iraq. With vaccination still extremely limited in Iraq and fears the Mass could become a super-spreader event, authorities restricted attendance. The United States will do what's necessary to defend itself, Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin said Sunday, days after rockets hit an Iraqi base hosting coalition troops, further escalating U.S.-Iran tensions on Iraqi soil. Austin told ABC News the U.S. is still developing intelligence on who was behind the attack, which saw around 10 rockets slam into a military base in Iraq's western desert March 3rd. No U.S. service members were injured, but an American civilian contractor suffered a cardiac episode while sheltering and died shortly after, the Pentagon has said. U.S. officials have said the incident fit the profile of a strike by Iran-backed militia. Iran says it's prepared to take steps to live up to measures in the 2015 nuclear deal with world powers as soon as the United States lifts economic sanctions on the country. President Hassan Rouhani added Sunday the country is ready to fulfill its commitments after the U.S., quote, abandons its policy of threats and pressures, end quote. Rouhani made the remarks as he received Irish Foreign Minister Simon Coveney amid diplomatic efforts to revive the landmark nuclear deal. Ireland is not party to the deal, but Dublin has the role of facilitator in the implementation of the nuclear agreement. At least four powerful blasts hit a military camp in Bata, the economic capital of Equatorial Guinea, causing casualties, state television reported Sunday. The TVGE channel showed footage of wrecked and burning buildings, people being pulled from the rubble, and the wounded lying on a hospital floor. It is not yet known what caused the blasts. Global prayers are gathering online starting Monday to brainstorm ways to rapidly boost vaccine production and fight a still virulent coronavirus that has hobbled the world for 14 months. Giving impetus to the meeting is a warning from the Geneva-based World Health Organization that the pandemic will not end unless poor countries can keep up with accelerating mass vaccination campaigns in rich nations. The WHO will be part of Monday and Tuesday's online meeting, along with partners of the COVAX Vaccine Distribution Initiative. Jury selection begins Monday in the trial of Derek Chauvin. He's the white state of Minnesota police officer who pressed his knee onto George Floyd's neck as the black man said he couldn't breathe. Floyd's death last May sparked a racial reckoning in the United States and around the world. More than 100 people gathered in front of the Minnesota governor's mansion Saturday to demand accountability for police officers. Britain's royal family Sunday braces for further revelations from Prince Harry and his American wife Meghan as a week of transatlantic claims and counterclaims reaches a climax with the broadcast of their interview with Oprah Winfrey. Queen Elizabeth II spoke of the importance of dedication to duty in a television address hours before the eagerly anticipated interview. The two-hour chat with the U.S. talk show host is the biggest royal interview since Harry's mother, Princess Diana, detailed her crumbling marriage in 1995. Via remote, Diane Roberts, VOA News.
Welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
It is a happy news for the teacher that will now go back to work. And, you know, it's a risky situation, but it is also a happy moment for those who have been at home for so long without work.
Schools in Mozambique are set to reopen Monday.
Maybe not position again, but I don't think they'll gain enough votes, you know, to actually go through. And we believe that the party that is going to win the next election is a party, you know, that, you know, the majority of people who have supported PF in the past will vote for.
The Opposition People's Alliance for Change, or PAC, plans to organize a convention to choose leaders ahead of the Zambian general election.
Why is in 2021, Mr. Sassou Nguesso is going to claim himself as the loser? Why? This is what we're talking about. And this is what we're saying today, Mr. It's not rocket science. Everybody knows this.
And a civil society leader calls on citizens to boycott the upcoming presidential election in the Congo Republic. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Mozambique, a senior lecturer at the Eduardo Mondlane University is welcoming administration's planned reopening of schools beginning on Monday. Professor Eduardo Namboreti of the School of Communication and Art at the university says teachers across the country welcome the move. His comments come after President Philip Nyusi announced the reopening of some schools that had been closed. They were shut as part of the effort to contain the spread of the coronavirus. Professor Namboreti tells me that it is the right time for both students and teachers to return to the classroom, since he says they are aware of what to do to prevent the spread of the disease, including wearing masks or face coverings and frequent hand washing.
By this time, it is okay to resume class physically because we now understand what is this virus and how to prevent it. I think even the majority of the population, they now understand the seriousness of the COVID-19. So we are all aware what we should do, even though not all schools are prepared in terms of the, you know, infrastructure to cope with the COVID-19. But as a principle, I think it was time to go back to normal life, because we cannot hold the education of the kid sine die, because we don't know when this pandemic will end. So it is necessary and it is timely that we go back to normal life, taking care of all the measures that the government has announced to avoid the spread of COVID-19.
Are you therefore saying it was a necessary risk for the government to begin opening schools on Monday?
You see, since we don't know when this pandemic will end, we cannot hold the education of the kids without knowing when this will end. With the information that we have now, we can prevent the spread of COVID, because we all know how to do it. We all know that we have to wear masks. We all know that we have to distance. We all know that we have to wash our hands. So the necessary measures to prevent the spread of COVID are known by almost everybody now. We had enough time, 1 year is enough time to educate the people, to inform the people about the disease. I was against opening classes for physical interaction at the beginning of the pandemic, because not everyone knew exactly what was this. Not everybody was aware of the seriousness of the issue. At that time, it was too risky. But now I believe it doesn't present a big risk, because even the small kids, they know what to do to avoid the contamination.
What do you think of those who are of the opinion that now that Africans have accepted to take the vaccine, it will be more prudent for the population to be vaccinated to an extent that it will be much safer to reopen from now. What do you think about that assertion?
You know, the vaccines are not given free. Africa, being the poorest continent, maybe in order to vaccinate the whole population, that may take 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And we cannot wait that long to resume our normal life. So I believe while the process of vaccination is going on, life also must start getting back to its normal. So I wouldn't agree with that we should wait until the whole population of Africa is vaccinated, because we will not get there any time sooner, like this year or next year. It may take longer than that. And instead of dying of other, you know, of hunger or other issues while we're waiting for the vaccine, it's better to go back to our normal life, at the same time making the efforts to vaccinate the population.
Teachers in Mozambique have welcomed the announcement by the president, saying it's a welcome development and a positive step. Is that your stance as well?
Yes, because you see, with the schools closed, the teachers are staying at home, and those teaching in private institutions, some of them may lose their jobs because the schools will not be able to pay their salaries while they are staying at home. But that is not the main point. The main point, in my opinion, is that delaying reopening the schools, we are also delaying the progress of our children in their education. And Mozambique should not be taken as an island. Many other countries have reopened schools with different modalities. You know, some they are still doing mixed education online and physical. But we decided to open and ensure that the protocols to prevent COVID-19 will be observed in all the schools. So definitely, yes, it is a happy news for the teacher that will now go back to work. And, you know, it's a risky situation, but it is also a happy moment for those who have been at home for so long without working.
Professor Eduardo Namboreti is a senior lecturer at the Eduardo Mondlane University. He spoke with me from the Mozambican capital, Maputo. In Zambia, the opposition party People's Alliance for Change, or PAC, is calling on Zambians to contest in the party's general convention. Those who win will represent the party in the country's August 12 general election. The party plans to hold its internal polls in April to choose a presidential candidate as well as other representatives to lead the group in the upcoming nationwide polls. Andy Ford Mayele Banda, presidential candidate for the opposition party in the previous election, says the PAC wants competent Zambians to represent the party in future elections. He says the party remains confident it will attract enough votes to pose a significant political threat to both the governing Patriotic Front, PF, as well as the main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND. He tells me that PAC wants Zambians of sound mind to be part of the party in its bid to win the August 12 general election.
Yes, the People's Alliance for Change, PAC, we are calling on credible, passionate, and, you know, talented individuals to stand on our ticket as we go into the 2021 general election. I think if we look at the past 5 years, we have seen that debate in parliament has been so partisan. For us to change the quality of debate, I think we need to also change the people that go to parliament. It is important for the people of Zambia to understand that this election on 12th of August 2021 gives us an opportunity to change the quality of debate, to also improve the way councils are run, and that's by voting in the right people. We have seen in the past that, most people just vote, for one political party. They don't care, who that person is standing on that party. So they'll just mark, and it has brought us a lot of problems.
Andy Ford, what do you say to political analysts who are of the view that to have a shot at defeating the incumbent president, opposition parties with the same goal should come together and have a united front of defeating the president and his Patriotic Front party? Are you giving that a thought?
To start with, the idea should not just be about, you know, beating the PF. So this is the problem of African politics, so to say, where the only idea you have is to change things after looking at what kind of change you're bringing in, because you might be jumping from the frying pan into the fire. So we as PAC, you know, in as much as we welcome, you know, any change, because any change is better than no change at all. But we are urging the people of Zambia to ensure that, you know, we bring in the right change. Already, we have seen confusion in the alliance, you know, which involves the main opposition. I mean, there's been a lot of confusion with their alliance partners. You know, that is an indication of what should happen in government if you vote in a wrong alliance to run your affair.
Opposition parties have expressed concern that the Electoral Commission of Zambia has not been forthcoming with information with regards to the compilation of vote of the voter register. However, officials of the Electoral Commission are saying that they cannot just give information prematurely so it can be misconstrued. They are getting their acts together and they have set a timetable by which all political parties and stakeholders will have information related to the compilation of the voter register when it is ready. What do you say to that?
First of all, the Electoral Commission of Zambia, we know for sure that they are being controlled by the Patriotic Front government.
Why do you say that? It's supposed to be independent.
They are supposed to be independent, but they are not independent. First of all, I mean, if you look at the past by-elections, the PF has been flouting a lot of electoral laws and they have not been punished, not even once, including violence. That means that, you know, the Electoral Commission of Zambia are toothless when it comes to a ruling party. If you look at the voter registration, it was clear that, you know, the PF had so much influence, you know, on the voter registration, because where they perceive that they still have, you know, people to vote for them, where they won in 2016, you saw that there was an increment of voters, you know, in those regions. And yet where the UPN, which is the main opposition, you know, won in 2016, you will see that, you know, there was a decrease, actually no increment, which is, you know, ironic. For me, I'm very angry about that, because we cannot allow a small group of people to manipulate, you know, our democracy, to manipulate the electoral process.
What are your chances of defeating incumbent President Edgar Chagwa Lungu in the presidential election?
Thank you. Our chances are quite high, actually, because, you know, like I mentioned earlier, elections are dynamic. There's momentum that is going to be built towards the elections. And we believe that we're already putting the groundwork, the foundation, a number of things that we're putting in place, you know, and we believe that we'll catch up with the momentum. And once the momentum comes up, we believe that it will be the peak of the day. And also, the fact that, you know, people are not yet decided as it stands. You know, of course, you know, with all due respect, the main opposition has got a base, you know, which is decided that this is where they're going. But I can assure you that most people that have supported PF for years are not decided about which direction. And we believe that, you know, I'm not sure they will all go to the main opposition. The main opposition will gain, but I don't think they'll gain enough votes, you know, to actually go through. And we believe that the party that is going to win the next election is a party, you know, that, you know, the majority of people who have supported PF in the past will vote for.
Andy Ford Mayele Banda is the presidential candidate for the opposition party People's Alliance for Change, or PAC. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In Congo Republic, the executive director of the National Congress, a civil society group, is calling on citizens to boycott the upcoming March 21 presidential election. Telama Miabe says the participation of candidates from opposition parties in the poll will legitimize what he says is the certain victory of incumbent President Denis Sassou Nguesso. His remarks come after presidential candidates launched their campaigns ahead of the election. Incumbent President Nguesso seeks a fourth term. Analysts say it is nearly impossible for the vote to be transparent and credible, an assertion supporters of the administration sharply deny. Telama Miabe tells me that it appears the outcome of the presidential election is predetermined. He asks that candidates the authorities believe will threaten the president's re-election bid have been disqualified.
There's never been a presidential fair and free election. We know that at the end of the day, Mr. Sassou Nguesso is going to proclaim himself to be the president. And so We believe that that election is just a masquerade. So our question remains the same. Why going to an election when you know who's going to proclaim the winner of the elections?
But is the right and duty of every citizen to vote to choose their own leaders as enshrined in the Congo Republic's constitution? Why do you think people should be deprived or people should shirk their duty to elect their own leaders? Why?
I believe fundamentally that democracy is an ingredient for a country to basically grow for development. However, although it's a right for a person to go express their vote into a presidential election, it's also that election has to be free and fair. When an election is already rigged from the beginning, and I think that it's also the right for the people to protest. In fact, there are many international treaties that contain clear articulations on the right to protest. We are talking about a non-violent protest where people are going to express their right because those rights are being abused by a corrupt dictatorship government.
Several presidential candidates have qualified to challenge incumbent President Denis Sassou Nguesso in the upcoming elections. You are advising them not to participate in the election as well?
We first have to understand that people go to a presidential election for many reasons. So they could be going for presidential election because they want to be recognized. Some people are going there for X, Y, Z reason. But I will doubt that there's anybody who's going to this election and thinks that they're going to win the election. And after they've won the election, Sassou Nguesso is going to leave power.
Those who are candidates today, what will they do at the end of the 2021 election when Mr. Sassou Nguesso is proclaiming himself to become president again after maybe he has won 5% of the vote? And then we have a candidate that is running right now. They know some of them were candidates last election. They've complained that the process was not fair. They complained that the organization that was supposed to be organizing election was corrupted. But yet it's the same organization that is in place today. So this is what we're saying. This election is a masquerade.
There's an ongoing global coronavirus pandemic. And to putting the lives of the people in danger. And two, would you have any additional plans if the powers that be or the authorities decide to crack down on these demonstrations that you are calling for?
So the fact that it's COVID-19, I mean, even if they're going to elections, it's COVID-19, they have to be online, right? So that argument does not hold, that the fact that there's a COVID-19, therefore people cannot protest. We have seen protests in this country. What we're saying is this. We're not against democratic elections. We're calling for free and fair elections. The people of Congo have the right to free and fair elections to decide of who's going to be their leader. The leader is the one who's going to be making decisions for them. Sassou Nguesso has been in power since 1979. Do not organize elections to lose them. They want a legitimacy. They want a fake, a masquerade presidential election where they're going to come up the winner and they're going to say, hey, I just won the election. And so what I'm advocating right now is to the right for people to protest, right? The right for people to express or to boycott the election. Don't go to the election. Why go when you know this person is just going to proclaim himself as the winner? But we know he has never won a single presidential election in that country. So why is it going to be different today? Why is in 2021, Mr. Sassou Nguesso is going to claim himself as the loser? Why? This is what we're talking about. And this is what we're saying today, Mr. It's not rocket science. Everybody knows this.
Tilama Miabe is the executive director of the National Congress, a civil society group in Congo Republic. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. Malawi has received its first 360,000 doses of COVID-19 vaccine. The shipment Friday afternoon is the first tranche of about 1.2 million doses of Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine allocations for Malawi through the COVAX program. Government authorities say the arrival marks a milestone for Malawi in the fight against the COVID-19 pandemic, which has so far infected over 32,000 people and claimed over 1,000 lives in Malawi. Health experts, however, warn people against complacency. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the Malawian commercial capital, Blantyre.
The vaccine's arrival was received with excitement at Kamuzu International Airport in Malawi's capital, Lilongwe. Health Minister Kumbize Kandodo Chiponda told a televised briefing that the arrival of the vaccine signals the beginning of a return to normal life.
That box represents restoration. In that box, it gives us hope that one day soon we'll have the opportunity to see our beautiful smiles on our faces. You know, in that box, there is hope that indeed soon we're going to shake hands.
Priority groups to receive the first vaccinations include teachers, healthcare workers, government security officers, the elderly, and those with underlying conditions. Malawi registered its first three cases of COVID-19 last April. However, infections reached a critical level during the second wave of the pandemic starting in November, when 30% of those tested each day were positive for COVID-19, leading Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera to declare the pandemic a national disaster. However, recently the infection rate in Malawi has been slowing down, averaging 80%. Dr. Charles Mwansambo, the Secretary of Health, says the vaccines should not encourage complacency.
The vaccines are here, yes, but this is one of the tools in our fight against COVID-19. So the fact that the vaccines are here doesn't mean that we should relax. Let's continue washing our hands regularly with soap and water, and of course those with sanitizer, use sanitizer. Let's watch that 1 meter distance and avoid crowds.
UNICEF is coordinating shipments of COVID-19 vaccines for COVAX. The effort to assure COVID-19 vaccine availability worldwide. UNICEF country representative in Malawi, Rudolf Chivenk, says that globally, the COVAX facility plans to deliver close to 2 billion doses of COVID-19 vaccines this year.
Additionally, UNICEF will procure sufficient quantities of syringes and safety boxes this year and ensure that these arrive in countries before the vaccines. Malawi has already received 360,000 syringes and more than 3,600 safety boxes to initiate the vaccination rollout.
Malawi is expected to begin vaccinations next week, with Chakwera to have the first shot. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Hello, this is James Barton, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. But first, women's rights are calling Zimbabwe authorities to unconditionally release three female opposition activists arrested for the third time in less than a year for flouting the country's lockdowns regulations to contain coronavirus. As Colombo's Mavunga reports for VOA News from the Zimbabwean capital Harare, the three women say their arrest is victimization meant to silence dissent.
The three young women, Joanna Mamombe, Netsai Marowa, and Cecilia Shimbiri, appeared in court Saturday, where they were denied bail after their arrest Friday for allegedly holding a gathering in contravention of Zimbabwe's lockdown regulations to contain coronavirus. The three members of Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, face 10 years in jail if convicted for flouting the country's lockdown laws. But Mamombe, a member of parliament, is defiant and says they are innocent.
They're trying to silence, you know, the voices of young people who are trying to stand up and, you know, speak out against the injustice that are happening in Zimbabwe. They want to make sure that we are shattered, we are broken, and so this is why they continuously victimize us. So we've become a soft target for the state, I should say. I don't know, maybe because we are young people or we are young women, but we are not going to be silenced by this mere victimization. In actual fact, they don't know what they're creating by this continuous harassment and victimization.
Zimbabwe prosecutors refused to comment Saturday. Women's rights group Equality Now is calling for the trio's release. Faiza Mohammed is the head of Equality Now in Africa,
which is part of an ongoing campaign of state prosecution in Zimbabwe. The three were arrested in May after attending a peaceful protest in Harare to express legitimate concerns about the widespread food shortages during the pandemic. They were abducted from police custody by suspected state agents and subjected to a horrific, sustained physical and sexual assault, which has caused long-term mental and physical damage. The government must stop malicious prosecution, free them from police custody, and launch an independent investigation into the brutal attack committed against this woman.
The trio was initially arrested for protesting authorities' failure to provide social protection during COVID-19 lockdowns in Zimbabwe. They were later arrested for faking their abductions. They are back in court Monday to appeal their denied bail. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. It was a full-packed weekend for football in Africa. Ghana took the Under-20 Africa Cup of Nations title after a 2-0 win over Uganda in the final in Nokochet, Mauritania, on Saturday. Ghana's black satellites thus clinched their fourth Under-20 continental title and the first since their last in 2009. Ghana's win over Uganda was the same scoreline the two countries posted when they last met in a continental final, this being in the 1978 Senior Cup of Nations. Early on Friday, Gambia beat Tunisia 4-2 in penalties to take third place. And Tanzania champions Simba Sports Club remained on top of Group A in the CAF Champions League after a goalless draw against El Merrikh in Khartoum on Saturday. The point sees Simba moved 7 points, having won both their opening matches, while Merrick picked up their first point of the group phase but remained bottom of the group. South Africa's Kaizer Chiefs picked up their first win of the group phase following a 2-0 victory over Angola's Petro Atlantico in Johannesburg on Saturday. Kaizer Chiefs now moved 4 points in Group C. And in Group D, Esperance of Tunisia beat 10-man Zamalek of Egypt 3-1 to move to 7 points. And in Group B, Mamelodi Sundowns beat DR Congo's TP Mazembe 2-1 in Lubumbashi on Saturday. Sundowns have now collected 9 points from 3 matches to sit on top of the group, while Mazembe, who saw their 21-match unbeaten run ended, remained on 2 points after back-to-back draws. This was also the first time since 2009 that Mazembe lost a Champions League tie at home. Still in African football, Patrice Motsepe's chances of becoming the next Confederation of African Football president increased on Saturday after his last eligible rival in the role, Mauritania's Ahmed Yahya, pulled out of the race. He was the third candidate to do so since Friday evening. South African billionaire Motsepe is now the only candidate left, although the possibility remains that this could change on Monday if current CAF president Ahmed overturns his 5-year FIFA ban at the Court of Arbitration for Sport. But the chance of Motsepe, who owns South Africa's 2016 African champions Mamelodi Sundowns, becoming the CAF president when elections take place on Friday, looks good. Motsepe is Africa's 9th richest man, according to Forbes magazine, which estimates his wealth at $2.9 billion. The Moroccan capital Rabat will host the elections on Friday, March the 12th. Meanwhile, the World Athletics has approved plans for reform of the Russian Athletics Federation. The move means Russia is now closer to having its suspension from World Athletics for doping offenses lifted. A number of deadlines for reform have been set for the coming year, including targets for wider drug testing. World Athletics President Lord Coe called it a roadmap to rebuild trust. No date has been set for Russia's readmittance to World Athletics, but a detailed timeline relating to the sports governance, funding, anti-doping regime, and education of athletes has been set out and is to be monitored. And that's it for this edition of Night in Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent. Now we're drinking Saming Yeeta. In Zanzia Oway, Nini Nanya Be, Afeine Drumezo, Miachia Guzo. I waited for so long. For my love, Afeine Drumezo, Miachia Guzo.
katik, katika, katik, katika, katik, katika. Nina miladi kaya rumba, kibao kata kinyonga. Fukoni na mavumba, lungu ndichi lina sunta,
I'm mala Bichan tembilo mala Bekaw tewala Rasun bizu atallala Ndala fikir kale
Django, 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 صبورك احلى صبورك احلى هزنا الطيار ورمى نافع قبل رحله ضايع بين الحيوت وما لقيتش بلاصه حومة بين بلاد الهوت يما خلوني بشي خامس موت وحكم ناس الراقه والكراسي باللهبوت نحب نشد الروت ونقلب المناظر نقلب وجهي من هنا يما ما نحب نعيش الاحياء بالموت نوفا كيما ولد الزارع بشي خاطب له ريوس الرجالة ميلة رزنط بالتخمام وبشي خالم خاخم بيلة ولاد الحومة اشواتنا مقيلة شرف العينين بالخير مايش بست فيلة حبوا يسوقونا كيف الزيلة ومربط في زريبة وخطوة السكين مكيلة يحبوا كبري ما عندك شي عيلة نعيشوا في سيستام حكمه ولاد المتحيلة يحبوا غايب على الوجود ساكت على حقك وراضي باللي يحبوا موجود يما تجري وماك اشخالت على الكوت اشخال اولاد الحومة قطع قطع من الحدود تزيدوا في قفصك مربوط واذبع مسيبو زيدك لك عشاك يما حبوك قاعد في زنقة مرفوض والمستقبل اللي تشوف فيه متعدي بحفاد
يا ليلي ويا ليلة وش بش نسكي لك يما وقالوا لي ليلة صغير وفي قلبي غمة حب الدين ودير الفوق يحبوا يقصوا لجناحي قولي ذكراني مخنوق منك طالب اسماحي يا ليلي يا ليلى وش بس نشكي لك يما وقالوا لي ليلى صغيروا في قلبي غمة حب الدين ودير الفوق يحبوا يقصوا لجناحي قولي ذكراني مخنوق منك طالب اسماحي
Stop the
nabato Ondenza Antonio Utenga la lepsuko Estando sonye Baby, I've been thinking about you
Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Bill Eagle, Reporter Douglas Impuga, and Producer Saida Hamdoun, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, if the root is strong, the fruit is sweet. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.